In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I have Dan Norris on the show, and we talk about five startup rules to live by. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 183. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
I'm experimenting a little bit with some various biohacks to help improve my overall health. Some things are just basic things, like just going to the gym on a very regular basis. But some of them are, I'll say, a little bit out there. And so far, though, it seems to be working. There's certain things that, you know, I've noticed, for example. So, like, I'm working less hours, and it feels like I should pull back on spending time working out. But at the same time, I recognize that if I do that, then what's going to happen is I'm going to spend those additional hours, you know, working on my products and stuff. But at the same time, my productivity is going to drop. So it's this weird state where, like, I know in the back of my mind that I really shouldn't do that, but it's like I want to.
I'm a little confused. You're working less hours by choice, and that makes you feel like you should work out less?
No, like, I'm working less hours, and I'm spending that time instead working out.
Oh, I see.
So, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, I wish I had more time to work on this stuff. Where can I get that time from? And the natural place to get it from would be to, you know, stop working out.
Stop your exercise, like, right?
Exactly, the exercise. But I know that if I do that, it's going to negatively impact my productivity when I am working.
When you are working, right.
And the other thing is, my wife's a fitness instructor, so she actually put together one of the workout routines for me. And I tried it out, and afterwards, I gave her a call, and I was like, I think you're trying to kill me, because that was really rough. And she's like, oh, it couldn't have possibly been that bad. And then she tried it, and she's like, sorry.
Nice. She was trying to kill you for the life of
I think,
money.
I think so.
Cool. Well, hey, I have a couple things this week. The first is a congratulations to a three-time MicroConf attendee. His name's Robert Gertzichek. And he writes software that controls mills, which are little wood. They're very large, but sometimes they're small. They're things that cut wood, right, to make cabinets and to do really intricate cuts. And he said that they'd taken the software. He's been doing it full time for years. They've taken it as far as they could. So they decided to actually launch their own mill to build some hardware. And so he launched a Kickstarter. They wanted $30,000, and it was funded the first day. They're now at $61,000, and they have 29 days to go still as of recording of this podcast. So we'll link it up in the show notes, or you can also search on the Nomad CNC Mill. So check it out for sure, and congratulations to Robert for getting that up on Kickstarter. The other announcement from the community is Brennan Dunn is going to be in Edinburgh in Scotland in June. He's going to be talking at the Edinburgh Disruption and Publishing Conference on June 20th. Brennan's also looking at putting together a workshop about online marketing and starting a business. So if you're interested, if you know Brennan and you're in the Edinburgh area, I would recommend dropping him an email at brennan@planscope.io and letting him know you're interested so that when he throws it together, he can be in touch.
Very cool.
So today, Mike and I have the pleasure of welcoming Dan Norris on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited. I'm a huge fan of the show, so I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Very cool. So Dan, if you haven't heard of Dan, he has his own podcast. He has a blog. He has a startup or two or three at any given time. Dan, I know I'm not doing what you're up to justice. You want to give folks a little 30-second intro to what you've been up to last year or two?
Well, at the moment, we've only really got one business, and that makes me very happy because in the last year, we've had about four or five. Most of them have failed. At the moment, our business is WP Curve. We do unlimited WordPress small jobs for $69 a month, and we operate 24/7. About 10 months ago, I had kind of a big failure with my last startup, and I was a couple of weeks away from needing to get a job, and I launched WP Curve. In that time, we've signed up 250 customers, and we're up to about $16,000 a month. And so I've sort of experienced in the last 18 months a massive failure and the opposite of that as well.
You tried to validate it all along the way. You built a list, and then in the end, it didn't work out that well. And so you wrote a post kind of post-morteming that, and we walked through some of those steps and talked about lean startup and startup validation and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I contacted you guys recently because I've sort of written a book that talks about that journey that I went through about that failing business and what I got right with the current business. And it talks about the validation aspect. And the book's called The 7-Day Startup. So it's all about launching quickly And I think what we're going to talk about today is some of those lessons.
Yeah, that's right. It was episode 142 called Does Startup Validation Work? And then we did a follow-up episode 145, which was Does Lean Startup Work for Bootstrappers? As Dan said, he contacted us. One chapter in particular stuck out to me. It's either 13 or 14 business rules to live by, or maybe startup rules to live by. Which is it, Dan? Is it business or startup?
Well, I talk about that a little bit in there. I think it depends what you like, but I like the word startup because I think it sort of feels as if it's something you're working on something a little bit more exciting than just creating a job for yourself. So I like that word better than business.
Cool. And so today we're going to be talking through a handful of these rules to live by. Obviously, we won't be able to get through all of them. So I guess let's dive into the first one. You have a rule. It says test every assumption. The biggest question I have about it is how is it possible to test every assumption?
I mean, this has been one of my biggest lessons, and I think it's the whole reason why I kind of had a year working on a business that didn't work and 7 days working on a business that did work, because the business that I worked on for 7 days, I didn't make any assumptions because I didn't have time. So I simply just launched and didn't know what the right pricing was. I didn't know whether people wanted this. I didn't validate it. There was no time for validation or pricing or anything. I just launched it, and then I worried about all of that stuff afterwards. And as a result, the kind of hidden benefit was that all of the decisions I made ended up being made based on real information from real customers rather than assumptions. So I suppose there's a lot of ways to do it, but I think, especially for bootstrappers, the best way to do it is to launch as quickly as possible. That way, every decision you're making is based on how people are responding, whether they're getting their wallets out, what they're telling you about the product, how to improve it, rather than sitting around kind of debating, you know, is this a big problem? Like, is it valid? Do I need to run some paid ads to test email opt-ins or whatever, all of that stuff, and cutting all of that out of it, and instead just making decisions based on real information from real people.
You know, what would you say to a founder who might be listening to this, or an aspiring founder for that matter, who it was in your shoes a year ago where you were working on a software product and you had to spend some time building something? You couldn't just launch in 7 days, right? Because you were building a SaaS app. Whereas your new product is more of productized consulting, right? You have staff who are doing things, but you really didn't need to spend time to build software up front.
Well, we've also launched a WordPress plugin within 1 week during that period. It failed, but I still followed the same process. And I've got examples in my book of people who've launched businesses very quickly. A week is hard for a software business. It's probably one of the harder ones to do, but I think that's a consideration for a bootstrapper. One of the chapters in my book, I go through like what is a good idea for a bootstrapper. And the amount of time it takes to build the product is a consideration, I think, is a consideration in whether or not it's a good idea. And like if you're in a situation like you are where you've got a bunch of success and you're kind of free to explore, you don't need your next startup necessarily to be a big success. If it fails, you'll be fine. That's a different situation than I was in and than probably a lot of your audiences are in. In that situation, I think you're better considering an idea that enables you to launch quickly and don't think about a startup that's going to take you 12 months to build for at least for your first one.
Yeah, on the show here, we often say 4 to 6 months of part-time work. That's kind of been the range that we've thrown out. You're bringing the ball way back to the 7-day thing. I suppose if it's software, maybe you'd give him a break and let him spend a month or something. But
no, I think with the example that I run through with my own product, it's actually really cool because when I started my business informally, it was effectively an analytics dashboard. It took me about 10 months before I really knew that it wasn't going to work. And it took me 6 to 8 months of full-time work and many tens of thousands of dollars to get my first paying customer. At the round about the same time, Bear Metrics, have you talked about Bear Metrics on the show? They're Stripe Analytics?
We haven't, but the owner, Josh Pigford, or the founder, he did an attendee talk at MicroConf.
Yeah, and that's one of the examples I go through in my book. He was able to start a business that is very similar to what I started, but he was able to build it very, very quickly, and he's done extremely well, you know, in a very, very short time frame. And there's other examples as well. There's a company called LaunchRock that launched on Startup Weekend, and within a couple of days, they were on TechCrunch, and within a couple of months, they were funded. It's difficult with software, but it's not impossible. Yeah, if you're running a service, it's definitely easier to launch quickly, but I still think you would be better off at figuring out a way to test your assumptions properly. There's another good example in the book where I talk about a guy who started a deal site for wine, and his assumption was that people didn't necessarily need discounted wine. What his assumption was people would get a bunch of different wines and they didn't know what they were going to get. So they pay $15 for a bottle of wine, they might get a $100 bottle of wine, or they might get a $15 bottle of wine. So it wasn't necessarily cheaper, but there was that surprise element. So what he needed to test was, will this site actually work? And he tested that by having a party. And everyone who rocked up to the party paid $15 for a bottle of wine. And some people got a $15 bottle of wine. Some people got a $100 bottle of wine. And he just looked at what people did and whether they talked about it, whether they engaged with each other, whether they're excited about the process. And that was enough for him to get some validation around that the concept was right before he actually spent any time on software.
It sounds to me like the whole premise behind testing every assumption is not necessarily about testing the assumptions. It's about more about moving quickly and doing things as fast as possible so that you get to that point where you do have the data.
Yeah, I think before you launch, I think it's more about not having assumptions. If you can launch quickly and not really having assumptions before you launch. But after you launch, we just keep coming back to this in our business. It's like every time we make a decision, we just think about, okay, are we making this because we assume something that we don't actually know? And if that's true, then why don't we actually ask our customers? And is it important that we offer 24/7 service? Is it important that we offer unlimited fixes? We assume it is, but why don't we just ask people, make sure this is actually something that they care about before we kind of make decisions around those things. So I think there's a way you can interpret it before you launch, after you launch. In every decision we make, we try to do it without assumptions.
I'm curious, you mentioned Josh with Bare Metrics and how he did it in a week and that it took you 10 months. What was the difference there? Were the products really that similar, or did you build a much larger product?
I definitely built a much larger product, but I did that because I was working on assumptions. The difference is before we launch, I built something that I thought I needed. He built something that he thought he needed, but neither of us knew. So I spent a long time, like mine had a lot of integrations with about 15 different other products. So it was an analytics dashboard that brought in data from a whole bunch of places. So it was much more complex to build, I imagine, than Bare Metrics was when he started. But at the same time, I only built that because I thought that that's what people wanted. So I made a massive mistake there in assuming that the people actually wanted to pay for that. What he did was he thought people wanted to pay for it, but he didn't waste time trying to figure that out. He just launched it and then kind of just gained that natural momentum, which is something we've noticed with this business, but never happened with my last business. It just didn't hit that point where it just started to kind of build on its own.
Right. I like the idea of launching quick. I love hearing the story of, you know, Brennan Dunn launched a WordPress plugin in a weekend and Josh obviously launched Bare Metrics in a week. I just don't know how far you can take that. You know, in terms of the analytics package you were developing, I know it was large and it, like, let's take a look at Drip. I mean, we basically spent 4 months half time and then another 2 months full time before we got it to market because it was just a bigger package, right? It sends email, it does real-time analytics. I validated it beforehand as much as I possibly could by going out and having the conversations. I'm sure you've heard the story, you know, sending the emails and getting people to commit to paying and all that stuff, which I think you did some of that as well, but it didn't work out quite as well. I like the idea of what you're saying of like trying to get something out in 7 days. I just don't think it's possible in every situation.
There's a few things I'd say to that. One is that what I needed to do with Informally was to find out if people had this problem. And I could have done that without software. I could have created a form where people clicked a button, connected to analytics, chose a bunch of their favorite services, clicked save, and then give them a message and say, your report will be ready in 24 hours. I mean, with WP Curve, I had a live chat on my phone that sat next to my head every night I went to bed in case it went off for the first 2 months. Because I was offering 24 services and it was just me. I could have done something exactly like that with Informally. I could have said, your report will be ready in 1 hour. Our servers are just processing the report. And I could have just easily done it manually and presented the report to them and then asked them to pay. And I could have done that in 7 days as opposed to 10 months to build the actual whole application.
That I like. That makes total sense. I've talked about doing that. If I were to launch Hittail from scratch, I wouldn't go build software. I would do exactly as you're saying. I would have someone on the back end manually grading and ranking things based on the data someone submitted. Or even Drip, like we really didn't need to spend that much. It's like you said, I was at a place where I could have a developer working on it, but we could have one off. I already had the thing built on Hittail. I could have installed the widget manually on the next person's site and linked it up to a MailChimp account that I had secretly sending autoresponders, right? I mean, I totally could have cobbled that in a week. So that I like. It's the idea of an MVP is not a prototype. Right? That people get confused in an MVP, thinking MVP is a prototype. It isn't, right? The MVP is just the minimum way to check that next assumption, to validate
that
assumption.
That's exactly right. And the one of the quotes in the book was something like, people focus on the minimum and not the viable, which is, I think the problem is they treat it like a prototype, like you say, and they focus on doing as little possible. But is this actually viable for someone to actually pay for, and does it solve their problem? And that's what you need to focus on. And to do that quickly, sometimes it's not software you need to build. Sometimes there's another way to build it. But the other thing I'd say about Drip is I think it's worth considering whether or not Drip is a good idea for particularly a first-time entrepreneur who's bootstrapping. So in the book, I have, as I mentioned before, a list of criteria for good ideas. And one of them is the ability to build it and test it quickly. And Drip might be a good idea for a third and fourth-time entrepreneur, but it might not be a good idea for a first-time entrepreneur because it might be just too hard and too competitive to build something like that. And I'm sure a lot of people have come before you and tried to. In fact, I know people who've built similar products to this and have failed. So I think that's worth thinking about as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I have recommended people against going into this market because it is so competitive. So you're right. I don't think a first-time bootstrapper should dive into this. Cool. Well, I think that piggybacks really well on the second rule, which is solve problems as they arise. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
I'm very big on this. Again, I mean, the first 10 months of my last business, I mean, I spent so long trying to get the perfect payment gateway. Like I could have set up with this business, I set up PayPal in 30 minutes. With the last one, it took me 6 months to set up a US bank account and to set up Braintree and to get a really nice integrated seamless payment form within the app. But why? It wasn't a problem. So why was I even working on that? So now, as an example, we're a support business and we didn't have a support help desk until we got to 250 customers a couple of weeks ago. We literally just got a support desk and we've been using Trello and it's been working perfectly fine until it became a problem, in which case we knew that we would have to upgrade and solve that problem. And there's a lot of examples like that in our business where if you focus on problems you actually have, you end up doing what your customers want you to do rather than kind of acting on assumptions and just working on a whole bunch of stuff that really doesn't matter.
Well, that's more about solving the problems that you have versus solving the problems that you're going to have.
Exactly. And predicting the problems you're going to have is part of the problem is that people end up being very, very bad predictors of what's going to happen in their business because there's just way too many unknowns. Some people think of it like it's some kind of experiment entrepreneurship, but there's just too many unknowns. Like when you launch a business, you don't even know 6 months down the track if you're going to be doing the same thing that you'll be doing. So why on earth would you plan for, you know, like a hosting? Like I've heard you talk about, Rob, with your setting up servers or whatnot. It's generally these problems, if they're easy to solve quickly, then they shouldn't be solved, you know, in a way where you're trying to predict what's going to happen, because 99% of the time you're going to be wrong and it'll mean that you're working on the wrong things.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's premature optimization and about how it's so easy to prematurely optimize credit card payment gateways, hosting. I mean, I've seen people with $500 hosting plans, $500 a month dedicated hosting plans, sign a 1-year contract and then not get any traffic for 6 months. And it's just such a waste of resources at that early phase.
Yeah, the optimization thing is a big one. Like I had a friend who was debating what help desk to install. And he's got, and I sort of asked him, like, how many customers do you have? And he said, oh, I've got about 10 customers. And he spent a couple of weeks evaluating what help desk to install. And I'm like, what's wrong with email? I mean, we've got 200 customers and we don't have a help desk. Like, that's not a problem you should be solving. The problem you should be solving is you need more customers. You can't have a business with only 10, you know, low fee monthly customers. So I think if you try to solve problems that you don't have, you end up not working on things that are really important. You kind of get distracted. And optimization is a big one. Like, everything you read online is about, you know, optimizing conversions or setting up your analytics or improving your SEO. And everything's about like fine tuning something that's already working. But when you start out, you haven't got to the point where it's working yet. So you need to be focused on getting it working before you do any of the optimization stuff, which I know you guys talk about a lot.
Yeah. You know, I think especially if software developers are starting businesses, we tend to gold plate our software because we've often worked in enterprises where, you know, as soon as you deploy it, 1 million people are going to be using it tomorrow. So you know that it has to be robust. So then when you step aside and you go to build your startup, your prototype, basically, or your MVP, I should say, we are naturally inclined to gold plate it because we think we're going to have 1 million users and we don't want to have to change stuff down the line. And I think it's been a big lesson, certainly for me, 10 years ago as I started learning this. But if there's something that you can easily or even with several days of work change later, then make the decision really fast, right? Do the minimum amount of work and then fix it later. There are certain things that you can't do that with. Data models are often really hard to change. So I do tend to put a little more flexibility into those. And there's certain other things, but for the most part, you can get around a lot of things later.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's dive into our next point, your next rule, which was look for sources of momentum. You want to tell us what you mean by that?
Yeah, this is another interesting one. We're talking about the bare metric story before and just the fact that, because I wanted to cover like the marketing that he did in my marketing chapter, because I've got a chapter that talks about 20 different ways to market a business. And I wanted to kind of learn how he marketed that. And he basically emailed me and said, all I did was told people about it. After they signed up, people tweeted it and then it just grew, right? Like he tried a bunch of different ways of marketing it, but what worked was people talking about it. And like with my last startup, I focused so much on different ways of marketing it. I think I had 25 different ways I was testing. And I had a big post on your blog about all these different ways I built an email list and different traffic strategies, everything else. But I just couldn't get to that point where I was getting any momentum. The only thing I got momentum with was my content. And that ended up being a big asset. But the actual business didn't get any momentum. And with WP Curve, the opposite has been true. Like, we haven't done any marketing other than just, you know, doing what we do, our content and our podcasts and whatnot. We haven't done any paid acquisition. All we've done is encourage people to tell people about it and try to do a good job. Yeah, and the momentum itself has brought it forward. So I think when people start businesses, they kind of hope they're going to get to that point of momentum. And that's why I like the idea of launching very quickly so that you can tweak things, or maybe you can just completely kill an idea that just for whatever reason is just not getting that momentum. And it's hard to predict, but when it happens, you'll notice it. And it happened with Bare Metrics, and it's happened with us. I think that's really what people want when they start. And so looking out for those, it might not be like in your actual business as well. Like I said, with our content, I noticed our traffic momentum was really good. Like I was starting to get rankings and traffic and mentions and backlinks and everything for our content. And so we really doubled down on that. And that's when it ended up kind of building our list and enabling us to kick off WP Curve. For other businesses, it might be something else. But for me, I noticed the content, and I noticed this particular idea was starting to build momentum, and then it just sort of gets a life of its own.
Got it. So to be clear, you're not saying that you should focus on word of mouth with this. You're saying you should try several approaches and really pay attention to whichever one starts building momentum.
Exactly. And I think the part of that as well is just relying on your own data and not making assumptions based on other data as well. So with the marketing, you know, there might be 20 different ways you could potentially market something. 19 of them might not work for whatever reason. I mean, they might work for someone else. They might just not work for you. Sometimes it's just not a good fit with the founder. And that's something I've found. Like I'm just not good at certain types of marketing, but I am good at other types of marketing. And testing a bunch of stuff basically enables you to whittle down what's working and find something where you can get that natural momentum, and you just get an uplift that is sort of bigger than whatever you're putting into it. And that's what you really need, I think, to kick a business off. I think it's very difficult to do the typical sort of 4-hour work week, send a bunch of AdWords traffic to a page, and then work out that you can make more money than you're spending. I think that's a much, much more difficult than people realize. And I think businesses do need that natural momentum. So try a bunch of options, work out what works for you and for the business, and stick with what works.
Now, the thing I want to point out to our listeners is that what you're talking about here in terms of looking for sources of momentum is really about marketing and business momentum. It doesn't really have anything to do with your own personal momentum, your own personal motivations, which, you know, kind of leads us directly into the next one, which is managing your own motivation. Kind of talk a little bit about that and what you mean by managing your own motivation versus the momentum of the business.
Yeah, I think momentum covers every aspect of business. I mean, motivation is so important that you can't overstate how important it is. I don't know exactly how to go about keeping that passion for the whole time you've got a business, but you really need to love what you're doing. You need to visualize what you'll be doing every day in your business. That's one thing I try to make in the book is, what will you actually be doing during the day, every day in your business? And do you love doing that? Like, would you do a job doing that? And I've started businesses where I'm doing cheap e-commerce type stuff, like iPhone cases and stuff like that. And, you know, it meant that I had to sit around packing envelopes all day, and it was horrible, and I hated it, and it failed. I mean, that's very, very easily avoided, because I knew that I just didn't want to sit around packing envelopes. So I think it's definitely worth thinking about how your idea is going to manifest in terms of your daily work. It's worth thinking about a co-founder. I think that's been a huge motivation factor for me. And momentum has a role as well. I mean, even just the success of our content is a really big motivating factor for us. The metrics, the vanity metrics all going up is a motivating factor. Relationships and networks, all that kind of stuff, and helping other people, all that kind of stuff really like helps you wake up in the morning and love what you do. And that's something that's a kind of a rule that you need to live by. Otherwise, you're going to just burn yourself out and either fail or just want to go back and get a job because it can be tough.
Yeah, I think a big driver for me in terms of motivation lately especially has been community. It's both my mastermind groups as well as the micropreneurs in the academy and at MicroConf. And then here in my local tech scene, I live in Fresno, California. And 3-4 years ago, there really wasn't much of a tech scene, but one has formed here downtown. And I have a little office with 26, 27 other software companies. And it's amazing to go down there, the energy and just being able to be around other people. So I'm a big proponent of being around others who are doing interesting things and are not, like, the more you hang out with other folks who are doing salaried gigs and you're trying to do something interesting, it's like they just talk about different things and they think about different things and they complain about different things. Yeah. You don't have the same mindset that we do. I think community plays a big part of that, especially for me.
Yeah. And one thing that a lot of people do is work from home by themselves, and they kind of think that working from home is going to be this amazing thing, but it's actually not that much fun to sit around by yourself at your computer working. That's definitely a consideration for motivation. I'd like to talk to you about that, what you're doing locally, because I'd like to do something here, just get that seen. But I think what you guys do with the content as well and with the event, you're helping a lot of people, and that's sort of, because you're putting into the community, you're also getting back from the community. And I think that's probably a really big thing for people to consider. And we try to like be generous with our time and give a lot of our content out to other places and do lots of interviews and just take calls with people who have questions. And that kind of stuff is a really big motivator as well.
The last rule we'll look at today, and you have many more in your book, as I mentioned, is manage churn. You want to tell us what that's about?
Yeah, I like this because, and this is, assumes you've got a kind of recurring business where you know when someone stops using your service. People will leave. And I like the idea of really focusing in on that because it gets you focusing on exactly what your customers think about your service. It might be maybe a better way of putting it is boost retention rather than focusing on the negative. But we had Sean Ellis on our podcast and we were kind of looking for a bunch of growth hacks from him, you know, to work out how we could grow the business. And his basic message was you need to look at retention and referral. So you need to look at, do people want to stay on as a customer? If not, why not? And do they tell other people about it and refer other people? And that's what's growing our business despite all the content we do and everything else we do. It's literally just about making sure that what we're doing is good quality and that customers care about it. And sometimes it's difficult to know that, but if customers start leaving, which they will, then that's a really good point to work out exactly why. And what we do there is just send them a really simple email. We've tried a bunch of things. This one works better than the others. And we just send them an email with the subject, did we do something wrong? And it's just one line that says, I noticed you canceled. Did we do something wrong? That forces most people to reply. If we ask them why they left, they won't tell us. But if we ask them, did we do something wrong? They'll tell us exactly why they left. And that increases the appeal of your service to customers because you're effectively stopping people from leaving, which means you're making them happier, improving your product. And that's probably, I mean, focus on product was another thing I had in my list. This is effectively the same thing. It's focusing on making sure people love your product so much that they stay and they refer to other people.
Yeah, I really like how Sean Ellis summarizes it there with, are they telling other people and are they sticking around, right? Because I think there is a lot more discussion online about optimization, as you said, driving traffic. Those are the approaches. There's less and less said the further down the funnel you get. And as you get to the point of I actually have customers, how do I keep them? And then how do I get the customers to tell other people? Those are super advanced things and we don't tend to get into them. And I don't mean advanced by they're complicated. I just mean that I don't think there's nearly as much information about those topics than the ones at the front end. And I think the reason is most people are in the beginning stages and they're not to the point where worrying about churn matters because, like you said, they only have 10 customers, you know, or they have zero customers and they're still building and just driving traffic at that point is perhaps the bigger concern. But I definitely like the one-line email that you're sending. With Drip, we do the same thing when people cancel. The email is a little different. It's two lines and it's from me, you know, from the CEO. And it basically says, please respond, even if you only have time to write one line, I'd really appreciate it. And it's enormous reply rate. And I get a lot of good feedback about pricing or just that they're in a different situation. They're a blogger and it's too expensive and they can use a free plan of some other tool. Or you know, even if it's not something that I'm directly going to build a new feature, at least I have an idea of like who our product is really working for and who and why it's not working, you know, and the audience of who and why it's not working for them.
That's right. You learn a lot from that. There's a lot of problems that you can solve that come as a result of asking people that. Like we have a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but it's not uncommon for people to sign up with us and then cancel after a day because they assume something about the service. Like they assumed it was for multiple websites or they're an agency and we can support all their clients for $69 or whatever. So those problems can be easily fixed. Like we wouldn't have necessarily known that, but because they arise occasionally, then they can be easily fixed by changing the copy on the website. As you say, a big factor in churn is who are the people to start with? Like who are the people you're attracting to the business to start with and are they the right people? And once you start realizing the types of people that leave, you can start honing in on the types of people that don't leave and therefore getting those to your site in the first place and focusing on working out how you can get those people as customers, which is going to increase your retention overall.
I think the other thing about churn that most people don't necessarily think about upfront is that if you've got 100 customers and you lose 5 of them in a month, it's like, okay, well, that kind of sucks, but I can probably scrounge up 5 more customers. But what happens when you get to with 500 customers or 1,000 customers? Because then those things, the churn starts to scale up as well. As a percentage may stay the same, but the actual number of customers increases. So if you have a 5% monthly churn, by the end of the year, you've actually got a 54% yearly churn. which is just abysmal for your business. I mean, it'll kill it. And you have to be able to address those issues and make your product or your service better. And if you're not doing those things, if you're not actively focusing on reducing and managing that churn, it'll eventually kill your business because you'll get to a point where you're losing more customers than you're gaining.
That's right. And I think like the solution may not be simple either. And I think some businesses have more churn than others. Like a service with ours is always going to have a bit more churn than like hosting, for example, where people just aren't going to leave unless the provider does something bad. They're just going to stick around. Whereas with ours, we need to keep proving our value. So the solution to churn might be totally different, but it's something that we're really, really conscious of. It's kind of a complex thing. I don't know if you've talked like on your show about metrics and stuff for churn, but if you haven't, I'll send you some links that might be useful for your audience.
Yeah, we probably need to dive into it in a future episode because it is very complicated. Even just building a churn dashboard is hard because you have to have all these cohorts and there's a lot of different ways to interpret things. Do you include annual plans? Do you include comped people or not? I mean, there's this whole, if people can't cancel, if they churn because of credit card failure versus voluntary churn, tons of stuff. And then as you said, it's never one thing that you need to do to fix all your churn, right? There's typically like 8 different things to serve 8 different audiences who are canceling. And as a note, if folks are, you know, if you're listening to this and you have a SaaS app or planning to launch one, there's an app that's going to be launching called Keepify, KEEPIFY.com. And it helps, at least does some predictive work for you to figure out who's going to be canceling soon based on behavior.
Yeah, I think like you can get carried away with all the metrics, and that may not be so useful to someone who's just starting. But what is useful is focusing on your product and working out why people are leaving. And that's why churn is useful, because you'll get direct information from customers that tells you honestly why they left. And that's something that you should be focusing on, because it's product. And if you improve the product, then you increase retention and you increase referrals.
Very good, Dan. Thanks for joining us today. Do you want to give folks an idea of where they can find the book? Because obviously we've just spoken about 5 of the 14 rules you have, and then you have another dozen or so chapters. And I think the book is free. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's not out yet, but it shouldn't be too far off. If you go to wpcurve.com/7-day-startup, at the moment, it's just a landing page for an email opt-in. That's the list that I use to email. I send one weekly email and I'll send the book through to that list. When the book's actually out, we'll just put it up so people can grab it. Maybe I'll send you the direct link, but it's probably still a few weeks away.
Very cool. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, man. It was good to have you.
Yeah, hopefully it's useful. If people have got any questions, I'm just dan@wpcurve.com. Feel free to send me an email.
And you also blog at?
Yeah, everything's wpcurve.com. So we didn't really delve into that, but that's we've kind of put all of our stuff onto that site now. So wpcurve.com/blog. And there's about 300 posts up there. There's ebooks and email courses and a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of the stuff is not really WordPress related. It's kind of startup and business type related. And so that's going to be useful for your audience. There's podcasts with Sean Ellis and Noah Kagan are probably the two recent ones that we've done that are the best for your audience.
Yeah, you put out a ton of content. You're very open with, you know, what's gone on in over the last year or two as you've started businesses. So there's definitely a lot. If folks haven't been over to WP Curve, I would recommend checking out all your content.
Thanks. I'd love to have you guys on the show soon as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dan. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.